A man said to the universe, "Sir, I exist." "However," replied the universe, "the fact has not created in me a sense of obligation." Stephen Crane. Welcome to Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. A week ago Thursday, the President of the United States tested positive for the coronavirus. Shortly before 1 a.m. Friday morning, the President revealed that he and the First Lady had tested positive for the virus. That afternoon at the White House, he began a regimen of drug treatment with an 8-gram dose of an experimented monoclonal antibody therapy cocktail. At 6:30, the president was flown by helicopter to Walter Reed Hospital. At the hospital, he began a 5-day course of the antiviral drug remdesivir. On Saturday, he was given a steroid, dexamethasone. On Sunday, he was given a second dose of remdesivir. On Monday, the president returned to the White House, where he will complete his remdesivir regimen. President Trump has the COVID-19 virus. He has now joined the more than 7.5 million people with the disease in the United States. That we know for certain, even though confusion remains about when he first tested positive for the virus and how sick he actually might be. We also know that he has been given a panorama of drugs and supplements over the last week. Regeneron, monoclonal antibody cocktail, remdesivir, dexamethasone, famotidine, zinc, vitamin D, melatonin, and aspirin. Some experts commented that doctors are throwing the kitchen sink at him. To discuss what we know of the president's condition and what this regimen of treatment tells us about patients suffering from COVID-19, I've asked Dr. Michael Murphy to join me this morning. Dr. Murphy is an emergency medical physician affiliated with the Peninsula Regional Medical Center in Salisbury, Maryland, and is a frequent guest on Delmarva Today and on Delmarva Public Media. Dr. Murphy, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Hal. Happy to be here.
Dr. Murphy, is this standard operating treatment for COVID-19 patients, or are doctors throwing the kitchen sink at the president?
I guess it's very difficult to say standard for COVID because the presentation of the illness has such a wide and varied path. Certainly the medications that he's getting are utilized for patients that have COVID-19, usually reserved, in my experience, for the patients that are the sickest and in the intensive care unit, as opposed to patients with mild symptoms.
What are these drugs? Can you tell us a little bit about this this regimen of treatment?
They range from sort of the pedestrian, which is dexamethasone, is a decades-old steroid that's used for a number of conditions. Famotidine is a medication for the stomach, and most likely is being used in him because the other medications can cause stomach irritation. And then you have aspirin, which is a blood thinner There are vitamins and minerals which are hoped to boost the immune system. And then the more complicated medications like the remdesivir, which is an antiviral medication, it affects the cell's ability to reproduce the virus directly. And then the monoclonal antibodies are actually antibodies that are sort of grown in the lab and injected into a patient that's very sick, with the idea that those antibodies will attack the virus and help the body's immune system.
Do you have any sense, Michael, why this regimen would have been given to the president in such a large number? Let me use the word combination, in such a large combination and so early in his diagnosis?
I can't really be sure of what the physicians were seeing on site and what was driving their decision making. I can tell you that if a 74-year-old patient came into the emergency department and had a slightly low oxygen level, we would certainly intervene with some oxygen, test them for the coronavirus, and if that came back positive, they would most likely stay in the hospital because of that low oxygen level, but they would not be given those medications as rapidly as the president received them. Frequently, what happens in a lot of these type of cases where you have somebody like the leader of the free world involved, they get a little bit more aggressive care than, say, an average patient would. You know, if the president has a bad outcome from COVID, it's going to be it's going to be viewed much differently than maybe an average patient. And so, you know, it's speculation completely, but it just makes me wonder if the concern was, hey, he's an older patient, which we know have the worst outcomes with these. He started to drop his oxygen level and they just got very aggressive very early.
In such a combination, is it still possible, or is it difficult to tell the effect that each of these drugs are having? In other words, do they affect each other in terms of the results that might occur?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I don't know that there's any synergy or anything involved with different medications. I know they all act in different ways, and so it's basically you're coming at the virus from different angles, just trying to do everything you can to stop the virus's spread and its effect on the body.
Just as a point of reference, when a patient comes into the Peninsula Regional Medical Center and is diagnosed for COVID-19, what would your first treatment be? And what would your first regimen of treatment be for that patient?
Well, again, it's very dependent on what the patient's presentation is. Like I said, there's a wide variety of presentations of this illness, from people who have no symptoms to maybe a little runny nose or sore throat to patients whose oxygen levels are markedly low and they're approaching death. Certainly a great majority of people don't have any symptoms or very minimal symptoms. And so if someone comes in and they have symptoms of COVID, certainly we will do an evaluation of them that involves a COVID test. If the COVID test comes back positive, most people go home. To be honest, a great majority of patients that suffer from this can stay home and be quarantined at home. Really, the only patients that have to stay in the hospital are those who need assistance with breathing, or if it's affecting some of their other organs, like it can affect the kidneys and it can affect the heart.
What are the side effects of this list of medications that the president has received? What could you expect from him?
Oh, that's tough to say. Certainly it's going to affect the immune system. the big side effect that people talk about is the one with dexamethasone, and the changes in a person's mental status when they take dexamethasone, which, you know, the most common side effects of Decadron is that it can irritate your stomach, can cause some stomach irritation. And really it causes sort of a surge of energy. A lot of people who start taking these medications report feeling very physically much better after initially receiving the medicines. And that's from a combination of how the medication works on the amount of sugar in your bloodstream, the energy available to the body, and the initial actions of the medication. To be honest, Decadron is the brand name. Dexamethasone is the generic name. It is used quite frequently for a number of indications, sore throat, asthma, rashes on the skin. It's used by oral surgeons prior to surgical procedures. So it's not a medication that, like I said, it's a medication that's quite old, and it's used quite frequently with really minimal side effects. So I think that a lot of people are saying that's going to affect his decision-making, and I think a lot of the concerns regarding that are probably a little overblown. I mean, it's certainly something that his doctors would need to monitor, but I mean, in 20 years, I probably prescribed Decadron several times a week and haven't really seen any of those types of negative side effects.
This is a steroid, right?
Right.
Am I correct about that?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll confess that the only thing I know about steroids is that athletes, I remember a period in which athletes were taking steroids, particularly bodybuilders, in order to build, I think, you can correct me, but in order to build bulk, and also football players, and its effect, and maybe that's the euphoric sense and the sense of an let me ask it as a question. Does it create a sense of invincibility? And is that to some degree why it was given to football players during one period of our history, recent period?
Well, so the steroids that most of those guys take are what's called anabolic steroids, which is a sort of a different class. There's a few different classes of steroids. And so those, while sort of on the same spectrum of medication, are much stronger and sort of work in a slightly different manner. And so those have the ability to help the body make muscle and generate muscle mass. The dexamethasone is much much more geared towards its utilization in inflammatory conditions, stopping inflammation. And so the idea is the COVID-19 virus causes a real ramp up of the immune system to the point that a person's immune system attacks its own body. And so the dexamethasone is used. The idea is that the dexamethasone is used to tamp down inflammation in an infected person's body. So it's a slightly different mechanism than the steroids used by bodybuilders and athletes. The bodybuilders and athletes are using that to gain muscle mass. One of the side effects is that feeling of invincibility and euphoria. And there is some crossover from that. Again, it goes down a similar pathway that they have that sort of causes an increase in the blood glucose, the sugar in the bloodstream that's available for energy production, sort of some of the chemicals that go along with that, that sort of produce that euphoric mood that happens initially when you start taking steroids.
It's Friday now, a week since the president's announcement of testing positive. Is the president still contagious? Does he still have COVID-19?
I mean, the CDC tells us that you can be contagious for up to 10 days. And so the short answer to that is yes. Every patient's going to be different. 10 days was sort of determined to be the safest time frame for people to be quarantined. And so Technically, from what I've read, he may have tested positive as early as last Tuesday. And so if that's the case, we're approaching the 10-day mark already. Anybody who has tested positive needs to be quarantined for a minimum of 10 days. That's sort of what it boils down to. You may have patients who are going to be infectious for less than that, but for the safety of the community, anyone who tests positive should be quarantined for 10 days.
Well, that's one of the mysteries, I think, is that we actually don't know at this point when he received the first positive test. What would you say is his prognosis? The doctors say he's not out of the woods yet. Why would they be saying that?
I guess when you think about, like we said, the people that are at the highest risk to have complications from COVID are those over have those symptoms up to those complications as well, to 2 to 3 weeks after you test positive or start having symptoms. So the idea that he's not out of the woods yet is probably accurate. Realistically, we don't know what kind of treatments he's currently getting in the White House, but if he's at the White House and he's not on oxygen and he isn't in any distress, he's probably going to be fine. I guess that's the best way I could say it. It's very hard to know without knowing exactly what he's undergoing in terms of treatment currently. But in general, if he's not hospitalized, he's receiving probably frequent evaluations by the medical staff at the White House. And if he's not on oxygen, then I would say his prognosis is pretty good. But there's still that possibility, as slight as it may be, that he could have a relapse or some symptoms that develop later than usual.
Michael, have we learned any more since you and I last talked, which I think was about a month ago now? Do we know any more about the long-term effects of the virus than we did, say, we're into this for about 8 months now? Do we know any more about the long-term effects than we did, say, 5 or 6 months ago?
I think we're getting a sense that the people who get it and they're very sick have a number of potential long-term complications. One of the things that sort of cropped up, especially because of its effect on young people who had severe illness, is its effect on the heart. It can cause what's called a myocarditis, which is an inflammation or infection of the muscle of the heart, which can lead to long-term complications with possible deadly heart rhythms or the ability of the heart to function properly. We've known that it causes an increase in the incidence of the formation of blood clots in the blood system. It can affect kidney function. And obviously the long-term effects on the lungs are the biggest side effect. So we're still learning. I mean, it is one of those things that the people who seem to be affected the most, the ones who are admitted to the hospital and in the ICU, are the ones that have the longest complications. But we are still seeing some people, even symptomatic patients, have these issues with the heart and lungs, and those seem to be the biggest long-term effects.
Well, we certainly wish the president and the first lady and the others around him and associated with him who have now contracted the virus, we wish them well, as well as the others in the general public who have contracted this disease as well. We wish them a full recovery. With cases rising around the country, we seem to be in the midst of that fall spike that Dr. Fauci said was coming and that most health experts have said is going to occur. Are you finding that the case in our area, in the Wicomico area? Have you seen any increase in cases, and are you anticipating any increase in cases?
There has been a slight increase in cases in the last few weeks. Nothing like it was in the spring yet. But, you know, as people start to come inside, have more contact with others because they're not outside and socially distanced, there is a possibility of a rather large spike if people don't, you know, follow the mask requirements, social distancing, and the gathering requirements. Yeah, we could see another spike in the, I would anticipate it probably being in the next, probably 4 to 6 weeks.
Where are you seeing the increase in patients coming from? Now, I know the university has opened, and I know that the meat processing plants have been have contributed significantly to the cases in the area in Salisbury. Where are you seeing the cases coming from now?
I don't think we can really pinpoint it to one area at this point. I don't have any epidemiological information that says it's coming from any one spot. And the cases are still so low that I don't think that there's been a locale that we're concerned about.
How many patients do you have at PRMC presently?
26 in the hospital currently.
Well, that's double. I believe you had said 12 when we talked.
Yeah, about a month ago. That's probably right.
Yeah. What do you think is the cause or is sparking this growth?
Well, I mean, like we talked about in the past, as sort of the year's gone on and people maybe aren't wearing the masks as much as they should. They're not following the suggestions in terms of the number of people that gather at one time. You know, we saw a case where somebody had a birthday party, and the birthday party, they had quite a lot of people who tested positive. I've seen my personal experience on this seeing sort of smaller but still too large social events where people gather and there's not mask wearing, and it ends up some of those people will test positive. And it goes back to the time of year as well. You know, if you have those events outdoors and people are social distancing and you have, you know, the ambient air is moving, and so people aren't just sort of, the air aids in dispersal of the virus, right? So if you're outside, the air is moving, it's less likely you come inside, the air is more stagnant, and so the virus has a chance to spread a little easier. So, you know, the change in weather, people coming in more contact with each other, being inside more, those are sort of contributing as well.
How about two things? One is testing. How is the rate of testing going in the Wicomico area?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Yeah. I guess what I mean is, are people getting tested on a regular basis? Is it easy to or difficult to get a test?
I don't know how easy it is. I think it's possible to get a test. The health department is doing testing. The local urgent care centers are doing testing. And there's testing at the hospital for people who present at the hospital as well. You know, it really depends on how you want to define difficult. A number of people will present with minor symptoms or almost no symptoms, and they want a 15-minute test or a 30-minute test. And those are not easy to get. And they're not really always, to be honest, they're not always indicated. The state test is generally the test that gets sent for people who have minimal symptoms. And it can take 24 to 48 hours for that test to come back. So I think getting that test is possible. It's not difficult, but it's difficult, I think, to convince people that it's okay to wait for that result. And so getting the test in Wicomico County is certainly possible.
The president tells us that we're likely to have a vaccine before the end of the year, I think it was, that he said. What is your sense at this point of the future availability of a vaccine for this virus?
Well, I think that's the key word that you use is availability. The presence of a virus and the ability to have that virus dispensed to everybody in the country are two very different things. Certainly, I think the possibility of a virus by the end of the year, from what I'm reading, is certainly very possible. But then you have to take that virus and you have to make 350 million copies of it. And then you have to dispense that to every town and village in America and make sure that everybody gets it. And so I think the idea of having a vaccine that is effective by the end of the year is probably possible. But having that vaccine dispersed and given to everybody who needs to take it is going to take some time.
I think I would agree. The distribution across such a large country with mm-hmm. such a large population is going to be extremely difficult. Well, Dr. Murphy, thank you once again for such a helpful and enlightening discussion. I really appreciate it. And I would like it, I would like to be able to check in with you again in November to see where we are with the virus, if you would be willing to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I guess we're going to see the next few weeks. That'll be very interesting for a number of reasons, and certainly checking in November would be a good idea.
Well, thank you very much. In the poem I read at the top of our program, Stephen Crane is right. The fact that we humans exist has created no sense of obligation to us by the universe. It has already, in fact, provided us with what we need to survive and to prosper. The control to cure this virus is in our hands. There is not going to be a miracle. It is not going to go away by itself. Wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands, and do what the medical experts like Dr. Murphy say. Stay safe. And thank you all for listening this morning. This is Delmarva Today. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.